This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, this is Visla Kumarisen.
And I'm Ahmad Farrahman.
And this is Digital Desires, the show where we discuss technology and relationships and how these two things are interacting and affecting each other.
So last week, well, rather last episode, we talked about the misery of Facebook, and we turned to a study that was very scientific, longitudinal, very detailed, done over 3 years, about mental health and social media use. And one of the conclusions that we came up with was the pressures that come out of the compulsory happiness that Facebook promotes, right? And we're somehow, whether we like it or not, if we use it enough, caught in that atmosphere. And we raised the point about how grieving can happen online, or if it's really a conducive space. And with that in mind, I think we should probe about that a bit more, right? Because our social media use is so emotive, we tend to think that this is some sort of free, democratic, open space for that. But in the end, there's a lot of filtering of feelings, right? And negative feelings tend to be left out. So grief, does it have a place in the digital world?
Well, I would say why not, right? The spaces are there for us to use as we want. And why not have it available for people to grieve as well? And I think this raises two different things. Number one, for the grieving person, how they're going to use the tools that's available to them online, whether it's Facebook or any other form of social media. Are they just going to be posting pictures of their, dearly departed and talk about them? Or are they really going to just pour out their feelings, every feeling that they have, expressing that on these platforms? Or are they going to reminisce on these platforms? Like, I think Facebook has what they call memories that come back, right? Using things like that. And again, it could also be whether or not the person wants to do that. The memories could be too much for them to handle and they could just switch off. Or they could just use that as a way to actively cope with their feelings. So that's one part of it, which is complicated enough. And then you've got the other part, which is the friends and family who are reading the posts, who are reading the status messages. How do they respond? What is the right way to respond? Or do you even need to respond?
Yeah.
I mean, I know someone who grieved very publicly on Facebook, and they were upset by the kinds of responses that people were providing because they felt that, I mean, people would say things like platitudes, you know, like, it's okay, you know, there is a plan, there is a reason for everything, which sounds okay to the person saying it, but sounds very differently to the person who is receiving those messages, especially when you're in so much pain and grief. So, but then again, I also get upset with the people who are grieving, because then what else do you expect other people to say?
Yeah.
When you post these things, what do you expect people to do? Right? Do you want to just leave it there as just a very public diary, or do you want some kind of response? Right. And so my message to the person who was sharing this with me was to state explicitly, do you want people to like, do you want people to express, or do you just want people to read and not respond? But I think it's a very, very, it's a bit of a minefield, I think.
Yeah, because like you said, and one of the themes that we keep coming into this entire conversation we've been having since episode one is that we are not totally in control of our message. And we are not really in control of how that message is received, right? So you could put it out there and it could be, you know, a heartfelt sharing, but not everybody might want to meet us there, right? The interesting point that you raise is about the medium. So in that, you know, if we're doing other things online, so why not grieve as well? But then the question is where? Facebook makes it more conducive because there's more room to type. There's more room to share photos. But I'm not so sure Snapchat is necessarily the best way to do that, nor am I confident Twitter is necessarily the best way to do that either, right? So I think that the other thing to do is to know what kind of discourse you can expect from the medium.
Hmm.
And I think given the range of messaging and commenting that Facebook offers, right, just the interface is a little more dynamic than, say, Twitter, Snapchat for grieving, then that might be the best way to go. My question then becomes a lot about how we grieve before we go to Facebook, right? So granted, there's this platform, our friends are on it, and they're our usual likers, even we don't know them. But our relationship to the loss, too, must first be refined, right? So I think a lot of what we expect or what we can expect online have to do with that first, right? Who are we in relationship to that feeling?
I think even before you get there, I think we have to look at your personality. What kind of personality do you have? I think some of us are quite happy to feel what we feel very quietly and be okay with that, mm-hmm. while some of us are not and want something more, right? So there is a certain type of person who would express these things on these platforms, particularly Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
And then going down to what is that significance of that loss? What's the significance of that relationship? Mm-hmm. How are you going to be experiencing this loss?
Yeah.
And the other thing, which I think we talked about the last year as well, how well you can articulate your loss.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, I think we've discussed it. That seems to be an art that is perhaps not so prevalent these days.
Yeah, I mean, because it requires knowing how you feel, and it also requires knowing the importance of that loss, right? So there is, in addition to, like you said, knowing all those things, how resilient you are at the face of, you know, these people, your friends or whatever, and the things they're commenting. Which then raises another question to me, which is, what do we offer as someone who is concerned with the mourner, right? Because the double-edged sword is that, A, we don't know how they're feeling, and B, they might not be aware of how they're feeling as well. And then you have the screen that mediates that not knowing. Right? So it seems like
I'll add one more variable to
that. Sure.
Feelings are not stable.
Correct.
Especially, I think, when you go into something like grief, it's pretty much a roller coaster, right?
Mm.
It's a jumble of different emotions at the same time, or you can have, you know, serious dips and highs and things like that, and it is a cycle that you have no control over, and it may repeat itself as many times as it likes over the day.
Yeah, over years too. Right?
Oh yes, and sometimes over years. Yeah.
And which tells me that the best thing to do is not necessarily to offer them a good feeling necessarily. It's not to extinguish it as quick as possible. So what options are there? Say if I do know somebody's grieving, and I want some response that's not feeble.
I would just say, I'm so sorry for your loss.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, for me, that would be my response, because
I
can't think of anything else. I can't say things like, I know what it's like, because I don't know what it's like. I mean, I've experienced loss as well, but every loss is different, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to say things like, it's going to be okay, because I don't know if it's going to be okay. What right do I have to say that? I can't say things like, there is a reason or there is a plan, because I don't know if I believe things like that myself.
I would
just say, I am so sorry. Mm-hmm. Would you like me to, you know, would you like me to come over? Should we meet for coffee? Or do you want to chat on the phone? That might be my response.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. How about that must feel terrible? So rather than offering something, you just extend a recognition of how bad they feel in that sense.
Yep, I think recognizing how bad they feel is definitely a good way to go. But I don't know if saying that must be terrible is the best thing to say. Because
mm-hmm.
I'm just thinking, if I was grieving and I was going through one of my dips and I want to say, of course that's terrible. What do you think?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Which may not be the, you know, what you say may not have been the best response.
Yeah. Or, you know, but there's also this other response to, I'm so sorry for your loss. It'll be like, why are you sorry? You didn't do anything. It's very hard, right? It's a minefield in a lot of ways. So, I mean, at the end of the day, you can just stand on principle, I guess, and then just, you know, just be ready to know that it's a very volatile space and time.
Yes. Yeah. That maturity is needed, I think, mm-hmm. on the other person.
All right. Well, those are our initial thoughts on grieving online. Some of the things, I guess, that applies even to grieving in real life. But we'll unpack some of the implications after this break, and you're listening to Digital Desires. I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat alongside Vizla Kumarisan, and this is BFM 89.9. You're listening to Digital Desires. I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat alongside Vizla Kumarisan, and we're talking about mourning and grieving online. Now, in the first part, I think we've reserved a lot of our attention to deaths, right? But there's a certain kind of mourning that I'm increasingly aware of now. And that is the things that happen to us either online, and they're often bad and tragic, or, you know, say, for example, having been shamed online, right? Say, for example, having screwed up publicly, and this is clear for everyone to see. Does the same rule apply, right? So I guess the question then becomes about misfortune in general, and then wanting to show your support to that person. Now, one can join the debate, for example, right? I've worked on a few projects through Project Dialogue where we've had some maybe risky videos out there that tried to push the political boundaries, and the backlash was intense shaming, right? So at that point, solidarity could be joining the online battle or something. And on the other hand, there's also this need to extend support. So how do those rules that we talked about in the first part differ, and to what extent do they apply?
Mm. The answer is I don't know. And I'm very careful to not speak generally. So I'll speak from my own experience. Usually what I do is I just ask the person how they would like me to help. What is it that they want me to do? And I use that as a guide on how to proceed. And I've also come to, this is my preferred choice also, because I've tried all the other things and that didn't work. And so I felt that perhaps this is something I would try. And maybe the person might say, not now, later, thank you. But I've never had a bad response mm-hmm. to that.
Mm-hmm. So basically ask, what do you need? Do you need anything?
Yes. And,
you know, there's anything I can do.
I read your post and I'm so sorry that this happened to you. I would like to help, but I would like to help in a way that's comfortable for you, that you would like. Mm-hmm. What do you want me to do?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I feel that there's a lot of projection happening online already, right? Especially when the issue is so polarizing that it might not be the best thing to fan the flames. So stepping back and offering that person some form of presence, some form of potential support availability, I think goes a long way.
Yeah, and by presence, it doesn't only mean physical presence, right? Because I've had experiences in the past where I've said this to people who are close to me, though they never asked me for help, they said that you just saying that was enough, right? So, you know, what you even mean by presence is quite wide in its definition.
Especially in the digital world.
Yes, yeah. You know, just knowing that someone said this to me, or someone is available for me for a phone call, or yeah, they're on my side. Mm-hmm. You know, it's very reassuring, and sometimes that's all people need.
You know, I'm just thinking about how different this process is today, right? The technology that we have that is changing the way we socialize is offering new possibilities for grieving, because the loss that I think all of us have. Especially by our age group. I mean, we've endured losses and deaths at a time when there was no social media, and family was there, community. And even then, only the people you know or the people you have some sort of live connection with would offer that presence. But now you also have this extended network of people, right? And I don't think the transition is necessarily easy, right? So I think we try to grief on these platforms almost thinking that we can do it seamlessly. But I think it's good to check that transition too before, you know, we think we might get the right response online just because they like our cat photos.
Yeah. But, you know, I'm also thinking it might be difficult for people like you and me because it's a transition. Because we grew up in a different time, we were used to a different way of interacting. But I wonder if it's the same difficulties that people of a younger generation would experience. Mm-hmm. Because for them, this is what you do.
Yeah.
This is what everybody does. And those things that you say are accepted forms of what is said in these situations or in these platforms. Mm-hmm. Right. So there's also that aspect, right? What we are used to, what we're socialized into.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's a bit trickier too if you're a public personality, because a lot of what we've talked about, we're presuming that we have private accounts and then we can monitor who our friends are, unfriend people we don't like. But given the given the fact that a lot of public statements, Sheryl Sandberg's, for example, are open to the public, then the vulnerability is there, and you risk more, I guess, unwanted comments that way.
But I'm also thinking of a different situation where, do you remember this was that swimmer in the university in the US who had raped a young woman?
Brock Turner.
And her letter at the court, at the end of the trial, was put up on Reddit. And then it was read on multiple platforms, and it was made available through different forms of social media as well.
Your Honor, if it is all right, for the majority of this statement, I would like to address the defendant directly. You don't know me, but you've been inside me, and that's why we're here today. One day, I was at work, scrolling through the news on my phone, and came across an article. In it, I read and learned for the first time about how I was found unconscious, with my hair disheveled, long necklace wrapped around my neck, bra pulled out of my dress, dress pulled off over my shoulders and pulled up above my waist, that I was butt naked all the way down to my boots, legs spread apart, and had been penetrated by a foreign object by someone I did not recognize. This was how I learned what happened to me, sitting at my desk reading the news at work. I learned what happened to me the same time everyone else in the world learned what happened to me. I kept reading. In the next paragraph, I read something that I will never forgive. I read that, according to him, I liked it. I liked it. Again, I do not have words for these feelings. Sometimes I think, if I hadn't gone, then this never would have happened. But then I realized it would have happened, just to somebody else.
I mean, for me, that was also a very public way of not just stating a crime or a statement against a criminal, but also a very open statement about how she grieved, mm-hmm. and the kind of pain she went through and she still experiences today. That was also used very effectively. I think it communicated the hurt of rape, the injustice that happened. And I think it made people of all walks of life really empathize with her, mm-hmm. and feel angry about what happened to her.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the most powerful things about this platform, right? In that I know we've been critical since episode one, right? But there are these moments that I feel redeems a lot of the issues that we've talked about, in that there are base level forms of human communication, human decency that comes through, right, in these moments of solidarity. But then though, when I was just thinking about what you were saying, I thought about the discourse around tragedies, right? Especially like terrorist attacks and earthquakes. And Facebook has offered the check-in feature in some cases. And some of the criticisms is that, well, not all tragedies are getting this sort of attention from Facebook, right? So this is the other side to Facebook, in a sense, being a business of feeling, right? In that it will, of course, forefront and highlight tragedies that are closer to, I guess, what's mainstream or Western fears and anxieties. And then, of course,
basically, how it's going to get more eyes on screens.
Correct. So in that sense, there is grieving, but of a different kind, in the sense that they recognize that, of course, people have a certain base level idea of decency and tolerance, right? But let's capitalize on it and say, all right, only Paris, right? But not, say, Bangladesh or something. And only terror attacks when it's a certain villain that plays up the Western imagination more than, say, an earthquake in Turkey, right? So,
Or a white nationalist.
Correct. So in that sense, too, we have to be careful and to be more indiscriminate, to be more discriminate as well into how we're lured to feeling certain things, right? Especially when we're using essentially a profit-driven machine, right? However much we feel that it's free, you know.
Yeah, I think we've talked about this also before. And ultimately, these platforms are businesses and they are corporations. And they, I don't like this word, but they have their own agenda. Mm-hmm. And in this sense, it is about making a profit.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And like you said, it is a business. And so human emotions, grieving, mourning, all that is also a part of the business cycle.
Mm-hmm. And I think the temptation is that, and again, like anything else, there is an offer to cure loneliness, right? That's the principal reason for these platforms, in that when they talk about human connection, the subtext, of course, is that you'll be less lonely, right? That's the assumption. You can share more, so on and so forth. But ironically, I think in some cases of grieving, that could just make your loneliness worse, right?
Because, isolate you even more.
Yeah, because what you get are these projections. So you're right in that, use it, but also be mindful that it's just a means to an end. It's not the end in itself, right?
Yeah. Yeah, but you know, there's aside from these platforms, there are also other ways in which technology has been used to help the grieving person. I think we read an article about this, a program that allows people to talk to their loved ones who they've just lost.
Yeah,
and this is supposed to help the grieving person deal better with their loss. But it seems to me like it's not necessarily going to be a helpful platform, because when do you let go? When do you actually say goodbye and accept that this person is no longer in your life and then move on and form new connections? Because it sounds cruel, but that's just what life is.
Yeah. This reminds me of an episode of Black Mirror. I think it's the second season, early episode in the second season or late episode in the first season. But it's essentially about that. When so much of our life is typed out and tied to these technologies, right? From the kind of music we like, the emails can tell us the way we phrase things, our favorite word, the kind of jokes we like, the kind of memes we like. All of this is documented on cloud. That the theory is that you can, with enough technology, replicate the person that you've lost based on that data. Right, unless of course they're like hiding secrets from you that you don't know, which is probably another discussion, right? So what if they collect other information that we don't know about them on cloud, right? And the episode, spoiler alert, so you can pause the episode now.
Wait,
you don't
which season, which episode is this?
I can't remember, but it's essentially the same situation that you said, like the person lost her partner, and they were so in love, and they had foreseen a future together. And then comes this service that gathers all that information and then puts it in a sort of organic form. So they have the technology to replicate an entire human being with the tissue and manufactured organs and stuff like that, even sexual organs. So because he's a robot, he could perform better even, right? But that's the irony, that it was not as good as a real person. But here you get the real person. But on that score, he was better. But in the end, the lesson, I'm not going to tell how she came across this lesson, is that it's not quite the same. And that even though she does not reject it fully, the person can only be used, quote unquote, because by that time it is just a machine, for limited purposes. And that tells us that in the end of the day, that's the denial of grieving is just really like a very limited and very misleading goal, right? Because at the end of the day, this, the idea of being fully human is coming to terms with loss, right? It's dealing with frustration. And she refused to do that and opted for that cyborg version of her partner.
So lesson learned is, even if something is really difficult, especially when emotions are very difficult, it's usually part and parcel of the human process. And it is important for us to go through it. It's important for us to experience it. Because that's ultimately how we eventually get over it.
Yeah, and I think there's a lesson in that when it comes to turning to technology to grieve. Because like you said, the danger of especially the generation before us who's also always wired and connected online is that they think or they mistake the, you know, proliferation of sympathy online to be the solution to grieving, right? So I can't do it alone. I only have these four people around me, but I need more. So what if they turn to these platforms to get to cure that loneliness, right? To say that this way I'll grieve easier, right? But that's, I think, very misleading to think.
Mm.
Because I think there are no shortcuts, I feel like.
No, there are no shortcuts. And I don't think there is an easy way to grieve.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, that's the hard part for most people to accept.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think we've covered quite a gamut of different forms of grieving. And I feel like a lot of the discussions we have is, you know, don't expect too much from technology, but also, you know, be mindful of your humanity and the things that only true human connection can provide, at least for now.
Yeah.
So,
and I think, I mean, the show is somber and it's probably very heavy for 3 o'clock in the afternoon, but that is exactly what these things are supposed to be. This is exactly what these things are. And I don't see the point of lightening up. Of course, we want a way to make it easier, but that making it easier doesn't come from saying things that are just platitudes.
Yeah. Just as we warned against manufactured happiness, we should be careful about manufactured grieving too, right? And the worst part is that...
Or manufactured sadness.
Or manufactured sadness. And the worst part is that if you're really grieving, you can't tell, right? Because you're in that cavernous space of sadness that it's harder to be discerning about what feeling is saying. Well, like you said earlier, feelings are complicated. Right? It takes longer to kind of work through them. Anyway.
Yes, so this was our show on grieving and technology. Our next show, we will be discussing the body and whether or not it's going to be replaced by technology, or how technology is thinking of making the body redundant, I think. And as usual, you know, we would welcome your comments, we welcome questions, and if you have ideas for the show, you know, we really would like to hear from you, to hear how it is that you use these platforms, technology, and how it's impacted you and your relationships. Our email is biggerpicture@bfm.my, and follow us on our Facebook page. Please just go to Facebook and look up for Digital Desires at BFM and follow, and we will provide all our updates. We're constantly reading articles and finding things to where we base our discussions on. We'll post all of these on our Facebook page.
Well, thanks again for listening. I'm Ahmad Fahd Rahmat alongside Vizla Kumarisan, and this is Digital Desires on BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.